Hello and welcome to the Travel Diaries podcast. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Holly Rubenstein. I'm a travel journalist and editor. And here each week, I'll be speaking to a very special guest about their adventures around the world and the travel experiences and destinations that have shaped their lives. Today, I'm joined by one of the world's greatest chefs, Raymond Blanc. As you'll hear, Raymond had a very humble start to life in rural France, and his journey to opening Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons, the internationally renowned Cotswolds country house hotel where he's been the chef patron since it opened, is nothing short of extraordinary. For half of his life, he's held two Michelin stars, the only chef in the UK to have retained two stars for so long. And of course, in time with his success, he's travelled the world and has many stories to tell. I spoke to Raymond at the Cheval Three Keys Apartments, looking out at the glorious London skyline. I don't think I've ever met somebody overflowing with as much passion and joie de vivre as Raymond. I hope you'll be able to feel that energy and be as inspired as I was at the end of our chat. So let's hear from Raymond Blanc. Raymond Blanc, welcome to the Travel Diaries. What a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Holly.
You know, it's funny, I lived above a Brasserie Blanc restaurant for 10 years. So I feel very familiar in some ways with your food.
Yes,
and
right.
Now I'm looking forward to becoming familiar with your life's travel diaries. So it's very exciting.
Well, I hope that my restaurant didn't disturb you too much.
I mean, it was very tempting.
Just well, lifting up to the third floor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, it's wonderful memories. I'll go back there every so often now, which is lovely.
That's great. Thank you, Ollie. It's a good start. You're doing well.
Obviously, we consider you an honorary Brit, but of course, you were born and raised in the Franche-Comté region of eastern France. Is that right?
That is correct, yes. Mm-hmm. And although I am an honorary Brit, because the Queen has given me an OBE,
exactly.
Believe it or not.
That's the official way of being an honorary Brit.
But I consider myself at least 150% of a Frenchman, at least. And you may think that the mathematics don't make any sense, and they don't. But emotionally, they make sense, because yes, I'm 100% of a Frenchman, that is for sure. Through my terroir, through my own village, my mom, you know, the education I was given, the rigor, you know, all that, learning that food is an act of love, sharing it is an act of love, preparing it, gardening it, you know, growing it is all the whole family would grow the whole food and for the, and the whole year would eat that food. Mm-hmm. So food is something holy for me. Mm. It's not just, oh, my little belly, all I earn is for you.
So tell me about that. Tell me about that as you were growing up and your experience living in that part of France and family life.
I come back from a very poor family first. Mm. My father was a very gifted man, but he never knew it. He never dared because he was a working class person.
Right.
He never dared to follow his dream. Never.
Mm-hmm.
And he suffered from it for long. So I come from that working class family. And my area is between the rugged Jura Mountain, where you have some great wine, okay, from the Savagnin, the Vinjon, the Trousseau.
These are all wines.
And between sandwich, between another region of wine. So that one is rugged and peasant. And then just on the right-hand side, you have Burgundy, which is much more elegant, okay, with all the great Pinot Noir, Chardonnay. And then not too far away as well, you've got Switzerland. Mm-hmm. So that's where I live. So it's quite a peasant, unsophisticated part of France, which taught me a lot. And of course, you've got to understand, from the age of 7, I was earning my bread by working in the garden. Every day you would work in the garden. You finish your school, you went in the garden. You always, because the garden was a huge garden. It had to feed the family all year round.
Completely farm to table.
It was always about, you know, seeding or plowing, or it was about removing the stone which seemed to grow out of this garden, or the grass. You know, then you had to plant the seeds, and then you had to look after them, remove more grass. You know, it's an endless system. And then the harvest would come, and you would have to pod tons of peas and beans, you know, and top and tail beans. It was then I would give all this food to my mom, who would apply a craft. And the smell of all this, it was a still life.
You can still smell it now.
Oh, no, no, no. Yeah. This musty, rich, complex, earthy smell was amazing. And watching it, it was like a painting of Bonnard. Bonnard could have done that, yes, definitely.
And this is really a story of seasonality, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's all about seasonality. So that was my DNA that was passed on.
Is
so,
that why we'll come on to Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons later on in our chat, but is that part of the inspiration of the name?
Very much so. The Quatre Saisons drive all what I do, all what I pass on to my young people, all what I believe in. It drives. The first thing I did when I came at Le Manoir was to create a mega garden, a huge garden, okay?
Yeah.
Where the garden would become the canvas of my gastronomy, and it would follow every season. It seems to me absolutely normal. And this garden now is heavenly, admired and loved by everyone. Actually, there are now 12 gardens and an orchard of 2,500 trees, heritage trees, which tells a beautiful story.
Let's pause there and start with the first chapter of your travel diaries. And that is your earliest travel memory. What would that be?
Oh, I remember it very well because I'm not well traveled. Okay. Again, we were working class people. Mm-hmm. So we didn't go to Nice or we didn't go to Rome or any exotic places like that. Actually, the state would pay for my holidays.
Really?
The French state, yes, for every child from poor family who didn't have an income, a very high income, the state would pay and he would go in a colonie de vacances. And my first colonie de vacances was in Switzerland. So effectively, that was my first travel, okay, which was only 60 miles away. Mm-hmm. There's a kid, you know, I was about seven. And kids have got lots of imagination.
Yeah.
And I thought that Switzerland would be completely different of what I had known before.
Yes.
You know, that the cows would be green. You know, there would be pink apples and the chocolate. Well, there was plenty of it, by the way. You know, and I was expecting this country to be so different because it was a foreign country. And I realized actually it was very much the same.
Very similar,
so yeah. It was a huge disappointment here. On the other hand, it was, of course, there was plenty of great chocolate, and equally, that was my first cigarette, menthol cigarette.
Oh, really?
Okay, in Switzerland, which was not so good. But really, Switzerland, I remember it as very quiet, very organized, very aseptic almost, clean, but the wildlife, the mountains, the torrents. We used to, early morning, first thing, at 8 o'clock, we'd all get up, 80 kids, you know, and we would go all in rank, okay, down the valley to have our morning wash.
In the water?
Into the torrent, which had created some natural baths, you know.
Truly, the temperature,
you know, that's the Trout River you're talking about here. Temperature was about 7 degrees, you know.
Goodness.
So believe me, you had to jump into it. And my God, it was freezing. But then right after, you know, when you get out of it, you know, you soap yourself, you get out of this beautiful, you know, nature's made perfect bathtub. You
so
felt so hot, ready for the day to come.
Yeah.
For me, that was my first travel, okay, Switzerland.
Wonderful. So chapter two, then, is the first place that you fell in love with.
Okay. The first place I fell in love with is all about travel and a deep friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Of a friend from the age of two, we lived together. That friend, at the age of 13, his family went away in Provence. Provence was like the end of the world. And I was broken-hearted because he was my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we went in the forest together, gathered the food together, you know, did all the things that kids do. You know, he was my best friend. He would protect me because he was 3 times bigger than me at all time.
Yeah.
And he was my best friend. There was such a fantastic connection. So when I went to Provence, eventually after a year he had left, I went to Provence and his family. And I discovered truly a country which was totally, entirely different from my Franche-Comté. The Franche-Comté in winter, you've got 70 centimeters of snow. The winter lasts 6 months. You know, it's blasting with rain, with ice, with sheets of hail. It's cold, less 20 degrees. That's the coldest part of France. So suddenly I see all these extraordinary colors, these blues like I've never seen, this marketplace with the fish which I'd never seen. Totally, everything was different. The herbs were different. The fish were different. The weather were different. The smell of the countryside was different, with the wild thyme, the sage, the rosemary, you know, in the garrigue. It was the smell, the lavender, fields of lavender. Oh my God, it was. And the first time I saw the sea.
How old were you?
I think I was 13. So you see, so I was not, I told you, I'm not very well traveled. Okay, I took that long to go in the south of France.
Yeah.
But it was an extraordinary discovery at all level, culinary speaking as well. All, they used olive oil, we used corn hull, okay, or grape seed oil.
Yeah.
You know, there was 10 times more garlic than in Provence, and we were all reekings of garlic. Okay. Yeah. There was these stews of bouillabaisse, which were divine, totally new flavors, you know, where the tomato was king, you know, and beautiful fat Marmont tomatoes with all the herbs inside and the fish inside, stewed slowly with loads of garlic. And then you did a mayonnaise called aioli, and it was heavenly. It was, everything was new.
And what stage would you say that you fell in love with food, or that you decided that food was going to be your life?
Very late, and I should have known better. But I'll tell you why. You know, I'm a post-war boy, okay? And I remember, because it's a lovely story, it's about my father, okay? Post-war boy, okay? So there was a lot of men who died, okay, on the battlefield. Okay, so General de Gaulle stood up in front of France and my papa. I said, France need children. So my father said, yes, sir. I'll give you 7, because it was normal. A family of 7 at that time was normal. So very proud of himself.
Yes.
Okay, he came to my mom and said, I am going to give France and the General de Gaulle 7 children.
Right.
And my mom looked at him. I said, no, Maurice, 5. Yes, mom. And he built a house for 5 by himself with his hands. We're talking about with his hands, and a big house,
Wow. Double
plots. I saw these men working until 3 o'clock in the morning. They would finish at the factory, you know, at the time of 7 o'clock in the evening, and they would start working all night to build the house. I mean, so that's this kind of work ethics I've been given.
Yes.
Respect as well. You know, respect of the nobility, the purity of work, you know, and of course I would help.
And so when did food professionally enter into your life?
It hardly didn't, actually. And that's strange because on my mother's side, you had geniuses. I had an aunt who had an amazing restaurant, rural place, but she cooked. Oh, la la. They were cooks. They were great cooks. My mother was a highly creative, my grandmother was a highly creative cook. She was always called by the prefect, or if a minister came in Besançon, she would be the one cooking, you know.
Wow, so yeah, no, really respected. Yeah.
Oh, yes. She would do a liqueur of milk with tarragon. She would do blanquette de veau with yogurt and lemon. She would do all sorts of extraordinary concoctions.
Yeah.
So the food came much after, because in the past, the women were taught how to learn. Me, I was a minion. Me, I was growing the vegetables with my papa.
You were doing the physical labor.
The physical labor. The girls were learning. So I was watching. I was a minion of the kitchen.
But you were observing?
But I was always observing. And actually, I can tell you when it came, exactly the moment.
Uh-huh.
It was the end of the season, November, and I had harvested wild asparagus, all the wild mushrooms varieties. We had sold them to marketplace. We had harvested the berries in the wood and so on. And we sold it to restaurateurs and in the marketplace. And I had loads of money in my pocket. I was 14. I felt so rich.
Yeah.
So rich. And it was 12 o'clock. And for a Frenchman, when it's 12 o'clock, the stomach, the gastric juices start to turn in the stomach.
Mm.
Whether you're 12 or 50, you know, the same. 12 o'clock is a sacred time. in the day because a Frenchman must eat.
Mm.
And suddenly, I was by that restaurant called the Pokerdas, which is the oldest restaurant in Besançon.
The oldest restaurant near to where you grew up?
No, in Besançon, yes, where I grew up.
Yes.
I grew up in a little village called Saône, 6 miles from Besançon.
Right.
And the Pokerdas was in Besançon, on a very old street. It's the oldest restaurant. And I smell this extraordinary perfume, very sophisticated, very layered perfume scent, which was escaping from that restaurant. And suddenly it hit my tummy, you know, and my senses.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I was very tiny. Okay, I was 14, but I looked about 12. So I entered the restaurant and asked, there was a sommelier qui venait there. And ask him, Monsieur, what are you cooking today? What I'm smelling? We are preparing the rognon de veau à l'Ermitage with the kidneys, veal kidneys in red wine.
Veal kidneys in red wine.
Which never a family in a cook would cook at home. So I said, may I eat? May I have it? I said, of course, young man, you sit down. And he was wonderful, this man. And he was a master of wine, okay? And I said, could I have a glass of wine? So he looked at me, you know, because he could see I was very, very small.
Yeah.
And could I have the best wine you have? Okay, so, and it was amazing because he took half a bottle of Côte Rôti.
Mm-hmm.
He opened it, which was an expensive wine from the Rhône Valley, and he poured me a little glass to go with my rognon de veau. And truly, it was as close to heaven that I could have been. And this marvelous man was so kind to me, made me discover a wine which completely harmonized itself. They were both friends, they were made for each other, and it was heaven. So that was a big moment. But then it went away, instead of saying, one day, of course, Raymond, you are a born chef. You have come from a family, you know, which loves food, who just cook food, grows it. But no.
Yeah.
And then I was lucky. There was always a lucky break. And it was a beautiful summer day with the wind whistling into the trees, you know, and it was a beautiful summer night with gentle breeze. It was a big terrace, very posh terrace.
Yeah.
Okay. And you had the maître d'hôtel with black tie, you know, carving and flambeing the crepe Suzette. You had the commis and the chef de rang with their Bordeaux jacket, silver epaulette. It was like a ballet.
Yeah.
And I saw the guests holding hands, the lovers holding hands, saying, I love you, toujours, forever, encore. And I saw this scenery, this food scenery, and I fell completely in love with food. Not to be the waiter to serve, nor the maître d'hôtel, but to be the chef who creates this extraordinary artwork.
Yeah.
So the day after I went to have an interview, and the boss was gray hair, gray eyes. He was a very old boy. He had done it all, old school and tough and rugged. And he listened to me that I'm going to be a great chef one day. You know, he listened for about half an hour. He said, okay, young man, I give you a job as a cleaner. Yes, sir. So I took the job as a cleaner, and in no time I became the best cleaner. Cleans these very tall 18th century mirrors on the ladder.
That's
with
that work
vinegar.
Ethic that
voilà.
You've
all
heard.
This for me, it was so easy, and I did that job well, beautiful. Everything was clean. It was like Versailles, like La Galerie des Glaces.
Wow.
It was that good.
So
and
impressive.
Everyone loved me because I did my job well. After 3 months, I was promoted to glass washer. I bought my own linen cloth, you know, with the best linen, which would leave no thing. And the glasses were beautiful, all hand-blown. And the French at the time would drink at least 4 to 5 glasses of wine. You know, it was serious
so
drinking.
The glasses were important.
And, yeah, the glasses were beautiful. They were fragile. It was a huge breakage.
Yeah.
And I became the best glass washer. And I caressed my glasses with my linen. And in 6 months, I knew all my wine, my Shiraz, from my Pinot Noir, from Cabernet Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, all the Provence. I knew all in 6 months. And I was reading every night all the great classic of food nutrition, food science, food environment, food family, food community, food history, everything. I read every great classic of all the great chefs. And I would cook for my friends all night.
Yeah.
And I didn't sleep. I just was completely in my world of food. And then I was promoted as a waiter, mm-hmm. and everything went wrong. Because I told the chef, so I could taste. I was excited. I was coming closer to the kitchen, so I could taste the food.
Yeah.
And I started to engage the chef, making, hopefully making him as a friend, tasting the sauces. And he was not my friend.
No, obviously,
he was a very tall
so
giant. You know, I was suggesting this. You know,
and it didn't go down well.
No, no, no. And he took a copper pan and just smashed it in my face. His eyes got darker. His moustache bristled.
He smashed a pan in your face?
Yeah, broken, broken jaw, hospital.
Oh, my gosh.
So on that day, actually, it's interesting. That's when I started to travel, really.
Yeah.
On that day, I lost my jaw. I lost my teeth. My egos were seriously bruised.
Yeah.
But also, I was also asked to go to Great Britain. So I didn't come like Napoleon onto a white horse in Great Britain. I came very humbly. But that idea of touching excellence one day was so inside me. Yeah. I was pregnant with it.
So chapter 3, yeah. then, is the trip where you learned the most about yourself. Was that the trip then coming over here to
yes,
England?
Yes, you could say so. And that's when I found the best time to open my restaurant, mm-hmm. okay, in Quatre Saisons, okay, in 1977, when the whole of England was striking and you have an interest rate was 17%. It was crazy. So let's make a French restaurant. That's what England needs.
Yes.
Yes, let's do it.
Well, so when you opened it, what were your dreams for it then?
Well, my dreams were not creating a three-star Michelin. My dream was to create beautiful food, which I knew from my mom. Mm-hmm. All this philosophy she had deeply rooted inside me. Creating a team around me where respect would be an important part of it. Creating an energy which is positive, powerful, and a creative energy. And I did very much my mom's food to start with, and everyone loved it.
Yeah.
It was in no time. It's amazing. Bad news go fast, but good news even goes faster.
How exciting.
And in 2 weeks, the restaurant was completely full. And I had it was a tiny little place with 40-seater restaurant with red and white tablecloths, 6 or 7 hand, cheap prints of Paris on the wall. I cut my own coquerel and I painted the faces bleu, blanc, rouge. You know, and
in case anyone wasn't sure.
But what is more important, beyond the star Michelin, because I'm not a mercenary, I don't work for stars. The stars are a byproduct, okay, of quality. I've seen too many young people losing their life
because they're so focused.
Yeah, so focused on star. Whereas for me, the star Michelin is a byproduct of the quality of work, consistency, the love and the hospitality and the experience that you give to your guests.
So you don't feel this, you don't feel pressure because you've maintained them for so long to carry on maintaining them?
Well, there's always pressure, but you don't want to maintain. You always want to improve, always. Because if you maintain, you're out.
Right.
In no time, you're out.
It's about innovation.
Constant reinventing ourselves. And London is probably the best canvas to show, because here in London you've got more about 300 or 350 languages or dialects being spoken, and as many culinary expressions. It's a hub of creativity, it's a hub of energy, it's amazing. London, I love London.
Mm.
I really love London because there's so much power.
Yes.
And you feel it, and people dress as nobody's judging you, neither on your color of your skin or where you come from. It's a beautiful, clean energy, creative energy.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
How's it? My name is Lassetti. I'm a tour leader with Explore. Come on, let me show you something. Oh, careful. Can you see it? Oh, trust me. It can see you. There, between the trees. It's not every day you get to see a rhino on a walk. I guess not everyone is taken to the right places. But you will be, if you explore. For global adventures, search exploreworldwide.com and don't just travel, explore.
Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb super host. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
So, Raymond, let's just pause there for a moment.
Yeah.
And move on to chapter 4,
yeah,
which is your all-time favourite destination. What would that be?
As a world, you know, it's got so much beauty, so much beauty has been created by man. Yeah, I loved Kachin in Malaysia, close to Langkawi.
Right.
Oh, I've never seen that in my life.
What is it like there?
Well, it was coming into a different world. It was like you were transported back in the 15th century.
Wow.
And it was a big cat, a huge cat, about 5 meters tall. It was called a city of cat. Huh. But beyond the city of cats, the city was full of 18th century, 17th century little houses. But I've never seen people like that. What shocked me the most is the people.
Yeah.
Because you knew you were entering a place which, in terms of architecture, didn't have very much to offer besides that huge cat in the middle of that city. Okay, which I found very odd.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's the people who made that city. Because there were people of the world. There were people born from the Portuguese, the French, the Chinese, the Malaysians, the Indians, the English, the Dutch, who had invaded, who had been colonizing this part of the world. Mm. Layers after layers, you know. And the people had eyes, you know, with blue with purple, sharp, you know, dark brown with purple and green.
Wow.
I've never seen facials, totally different facials. You know, it was unbelievable. I've never seen a mix. This is a wonderful melting pot of different religions as well, which were actually living very happily together.
Yeah.
And it was a true discovery for me.
So chapter 5 is your hidden gem. What would that be?
My hidden gem is actually my Japanese tea house garden. Because, I'll tell you why. This garden was of such importance to me. When I went to Japan, I fell in love completely. I was a young chef. I was a champion of Great Britain. And in Kyoto, I saw this garden and I completely fell in love with Japanese pottery. I fell in love with Japanese food. I fell in love mostly with Japanese garden. And I saw lichens that I've never seen, which were purple, green, yellow, you know, and which I wanted to. And immediately said, one day I'm going to create this garden at Le Mans. That's it.
At the manoir.
At the manoir, of course. And then we created a Kyoto house, a tea house, proper tea house on the side. That's where, in this Japanese garden, when I'm exhausted, when I'm tired, when I am under pressure, stress, I go behind the Japanese garden because it's total serenity, it's total beauty, where nobody can possibly see me. And I go behind a big tree and I just sit and stay until, and I breathe. And that's, to me, that's the best place to be. And that's my little gem.
Gorgeous. In contrast, then, chapter 6 is the place that you'd never go back to. Where it's been most memorable for the wrong reasons, maybe?
And when I came in here, I was about to say Boracay, which is a beautiful island of the Philippines. Mm-hmm. Everything was wrong because it was made a long time ago. That's about 15 years ago, and we were beaten by insects. The shower with a bucket of water where you have to put water into it, and the water would drip around. We got food poisoned, you know.
That can really impact your enjoyment of a place.
But actually, it was a place I thought I would never come back, but I think I had a lot of friends in Raymond, you must go, because they change. It's absolutely a paradise now.
Yeah.
And there, you have the most beautiful sunsets in the world you can get. They are purple, they are dramatic, they're red, vermilion, rubies. And then you've got millions of bats, huge food bats, flying through that fairy of colors. So then, probably, yes.
So it might be a place that you'll give a second chance.
Yes, absolutely.
So chapter 7, then, is your next big adventure.
Well, my next big adventure is in 2 weeks' time. I'm going to go for the food festival of Hong Kong, and I'm going to cook my heart out. I've been in China about 20 times.
Wow, and that's a lot of times.
I went to Wuxihan, where I wanted to create a tea bar because I fell in love with their teas. So I wanted to study the black teas, the green teas, and all the different teas, different processes, you know, and to create a great, fantastic bar tea in London with a tea sommelier, you know. So it's still a project between my
head. Is that coming up potentially?
Yeah, that could well happen.
Oh, wow.
So it's really about curiosity, about discovery.
Wonderful. Finally then, Raymond, what is at the top of your bucket list? That's chapter 8, our last chapter.
Well, the top of my bucket list I just found. It took me 5 years to find it, and I can tell you it's a part of France I love so very much. La Provence, okay. I really fell in love with this and always love this part of the world because, of course, there's sun, there's light, it's special. The food is light. So basically, I have found a beautiful little flat.
Oh.
Okay, in a place very close to Nice. So I think that's my...
The top of your wish list has been granted.
Yes, just.
Just, how exciting.
It's just being done. So, and I think that's the most beautiful part of the world. Anybody who can have his dream being achieved, I think, is a very lucky person. And I am a very privileged and a very lucky person.
Well, you worked very, very hard for it, so I think it's so well deserved. Thank you so much for your time, Raymond Blanc. Those were your travel diaries. It's been such a pleasure chatting to you.
Thank you, Oli.
That was the legendary Raymond Blanc. It came as no surprise to me to hear that 34 of his protégés have gone on to win their own Michelin stars, including Marco Pierre White and Michael Caine. That passion and work ethic is infectious. Balmond Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons celebrates 35 years this year. For a special occasion, I can think of nowhere better to visit. If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, then please hit subscribe and leave a review. And I'd love to hear from you. You can also find me on Instagram at Holly Rubenstein. All that's left to say is thank you so much for listening, and I'll speak to you next time. Today's episode is supported by Airbnb, and what a great partnership. If you're a longtime listener of the Travel Diaries, you probably know that we love to put our home on Airbnb when we're traveling. Like last autumn when we took the family to Puglia, we put our house on Airbnb when otherwise it would just be sitting empty, which meant that we earned some extra money that went towards our flights and maybe some souvenirs too. Hosting on Airbnb for us is also a family affair. My mum is an Airbnb super host. She regularly has guests stay in her little chalet in her garden. And my dad, who lives in France, has his home on Airbnb so that when he comes back to visit, he is earning some extra money while he's away. My dad is 80 and he only started hosting on Airbnb a couple of years ago. So hopefully that shows you how straightforward the whole experience is. He found it so easy to list his house that I think he's got all his pals signing up now too. And it really is straightforward. You can choose whether you want to rent out your entire home or just some rooms. Alex and I, for example, list our spare bedroom and that works really well for us. So if you have a trip coming up and you want to earn some extra money while you're away, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.co.uk/host. That's airbnb.co.uk/host. Thank you to Airbnb.
How's it? My name is Les Eddy. I'm a tour leader with Explore. Come on, let me show you something. Oh, careful. Can you see it? Oh, trust me. It can see you. There, between the trees. It's not every day you get to see a rhino on a walk. I guess not everyone is taken to the right places, but you will be if you explore. For global adventures, search exploreworldwide.com and don't just travel. Explore.